Our guest, another outstanding young broadcaster from the school station, KWVA. You've heard him as host of Duck Insider. On Twitter, use @Knight_Uresky. Knight, great having you. Appreciate you finding some time. How's life treating you?
Life's treating me great. You know, just got into Dallas today, driving up to Oklahoma tomorrow. But, you know, it's rainy here in Dallas. Kind of already miss Oregon weather, but, you know, I'm hanging in there and happy to be here and joining you on this show and looking forward to the regional this weekend.
Well, I think we all appreciate you taking the rain from here and bringing it there. So well done. So as a first-time guest on this show, always like a little background. So let the folks know where you're from, and also throw in, as you made your way through high school, what made you decide at University of Oregon, Eugene, is best for me?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up in Fraser Park, California. It's a small town, about 2,000 people, an hour south of Bakersfield, California. And really, what led me to the University of Oregon was the SOJC and going to journalism camp there in high school. In the summers between my sophomore and junior year and my junior and senior year of high school, I attended the Next Generation Storytelling Camp at the University of Oregon, where I got to live on campus for a week, take classes in Allen Hall. And really, I just fell in love with Eugene and the SOJC program. And so after doing that for two summers, getting college credit and then taking classes at the University of Oregon, I remember I just got off the plane the second summer and I was like, yep, this is home. Eugene just felt like home. And, you know, I'd always wanted to live in Oregon. And so when the time came to pick a college, I decided, you know what, I want to go to Oregon because I've always wanted to live there. And it's been the best decision that I've ever made.
And I got to tell you, it's the first time I'd heard of Fraser Park, California. But good thing for Google, I've learned things, Knight.
So yeah, what did you learn?
It's a really small town. And being from somebody who grew up 15 minutes outside of New York City, I'm always fascinated by the contrast. So it's awesome that you're here. So your age, where you're from, be it pro sports, college, were you from a sports family? Did you have loyalty to certain teams, or did you just kind of have your own little rooting thing going on?
Yeah, no, my mom, she's originally from Ontario, Canada, and so I've always liked the Ontario sports teams. I'm a Raptors fan for basketball, a big Toronto Maple Leafs fan for hockey, and then I like the Blue Jays. I grew up a Giants fan for baseball. That's a completely other story. My dad's a Dodgers fan, and he, you know, always wanted me to root against the Giants, and when 2010 came and the Giants were in the World Series, I was a rebellious 8-year-old, and I was like, Dad, you can't tell me what to do, and so I started rooting for the Giants that year, and they won the World Series, so I stuck with that team throughout. I would also like the Blue Jays because my mom's from there and used to go back to Ontario for summers and go to Blue Jays games. And so there's all that. And then my family, my dad's had Raiders season tickets for 43 years now. This is going to be his 43rd season. So I grew up in the parking lot at the Oakland Coliseum going to Raiders games my whole life. So big diehard, now I guess Las Vegas Raiders fan.
By the way, a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, I'm going to commend you there. No, nobody could accuse you of jumping on a bandwagon since it's been since I was 7 years old the last time they won it.
Yeah.
So well done there.
My mom wasn't even born the last time the Leafs won the Cup.
1967. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yep.
All right, let's
get... It has been a while, but you know, when the day comes, I'm going to be very, very happy, and, you know, that's loyalty right there.
Oh, no question about it. You're a person of character, just a little bit of a masochist. Anyway, let's get to some softball. So the Pac-12 tournament was at Stanford. You were there. Playing Utah, it looked like they were on their way, an out away from advancing. Like I said, you were down on the farm. What went so wrong in that final inning? Because, you know, I was watching and it was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I mean, like, what went wrong was just trying to do the basics. You know, it's the seventh inning, you're one out away from victory, and they're trying to intentionally walk a batter to get to a freshman, Shanti Posse, who, by the way, was the hottest hitter in the Pac-12 going into that point. She was slugging, I think, 590 over the last like 13 games prior to that. Utah was on an 11-2 run in terms of their games over that last 13 games prior to the Pac-12 tournament. And so they were walking the batter to get to Shanti Posse, the freshman. She had been hitless the entire game. And as they're trying to intentionally walk the batter, there's a pass ball, and it gets past the catcher Emma Kauf, and the tying run comes in to score. They eventually finish out the at-bat. They intentionally walk the batter to get to Posse, and, you know, Posse does what she does. She hits her third home run in the span of 14 games, and Utah goes on top. And that's just a brutal break. And, you know, that's something that we haven't really seen Oregon do all season. Oregon was a season had been 25-0 when leading after four innings. They're a team that when they have the lead late, they hang on. And, you know, having Morgan Scott out there, who leads the Ducks in saves, one of the top pitchers at the back end of the bullpen for any Pac-12 team, to have her have not only just a pass ball, but then giving up a home run. It was a real rarity, but, you know, Utah is a good team. They'd won the Pac-12 tournament the year before, and they were fighting for a spot in the NCAA tournament, and they had a lot they were playing for, and they came out and proved that they weren't out until the very end. And, you know, sometimes softball's that way. Sometimes it doesn't break in your favor, but at the end of the day, I think this is a Ducks team that's heading into the NCAA tournament pretty motivated. They've been a team that likes to bounce back, and I think they're really looking forward to an opportunity to bounce back against a good Boston team this upcoming week.
Talking Oregon softball, KWVA play-by-play man on the scene, Knight Ureski. Some specifics. I want to start with Ariel Carlson, obviously a local superstar from Marist. Seems like her career better one year, better the next. All Pac-12 this year. What can you tell us as somebody who sees her game in, game out, just the kind of year she had and what she means to this program?
I mean, she's having an amazing year. I think that, you know, she's probably going to finish second in the Pac-12 Player of the Year race. I mean, she did finish second. Maya Brady's obviously one of the top softball players, not only in the Pac-12, but nationally, and she gets all the recognition. But to have a local superstar like Ariel Carlson in the season that she's had is just truly special for Oregon. A woman that grew up going to games at Howe Field and then going to games at the Jane when the Jane was finally built, and to see her, you know, not get a lot of action early on in her career and just work really, really hard. And that's what you hear from her. Every time that you go into a press conference with Ariel Carlson, she just talks about how she wants to be remembered as a really hardworking player, and she wants to set that example for the rest of the players. And one of my favorite stories that I found out this year was from Coach Lombardi. She said two off seasons ago, Ariel Carlson would come up to practice and leave her batting gloves and cleats in the batting cages once she was done, because she knew that she would be back the very next day. She was always the first batter there the next day, picking up her batting gloves and leaving her cleats in the batting cages to have it there. And, you know, that work has just continued to show throughout the years. This year, just one of five players, actually now six players, heading into the postseason with 15 home runs and 15 stolen bases this season. She has 15 home runs, 17 stolen bases. So she not only has power, but she also has speed to her game. She's been leading the Ducks in RBIs, one of the top RBI and home run getters in the Pac-12, top five in each category. Also top three in RBIs, top three in slugging. I mean, she's really doing it all. And I think one of the most underrated parts of her game is she's moved from right field to center field with injury to Anna Delgado.
Yep.
Still no errors on the season. So that's the real impressive thing. Not only is she doing it offensively, but she's also doing it defensively.
And one of the staples of this team was defense. Top three in the conference in fielding percentage, fewest errors. We saw Paige Sinicki, the shortstop, co-defensive player of the year in the league. Truly did it all in the field. What about having kind of a next-level glove like her that has anchored this defense?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, and I think that that's what Oregon prides themselves on, is their defense, because they've seen it this season with the opposing team. Like, fielding percentage matters, fielding cleanly matters, because sometimes you can lose a game based on your defense and just the way they play. And I think that Oregon, what they do a really good job of is being versatile. Every single outfielder during practice during the week plays every position. So Carlson will get reps in left field, get reps in center field, get reps in right field, and that's made the transition. When you have a season-ending injury like the Ducks have, pretty easy because then you're able to move players around. And that not only happens in the outfield, but also in the infield. We've seen that this season with Katie Flannery, a freshman, at the beginning of the season, getting a lot of reps at third base. But recently, she's been moved over to second base, and that transition was pretty seamlessly, pretty easy for her to get into the second base position and just field it that way. And so the Ducks really pride themselves on their defense, their versatility, and they have a lot of options defensively, and they feel pretty good about themselves.
Couple final thoughts. Knight Yureski will be on the call for KWVA. Ducks face BU tomorrow, 2:30. Another All-Pac-12 player. I almost feel like Kyle Lushar gets a little overlooked. You know, second top average in the conference. She's got speed. Again, you seeing her up close and personal. What about having her as kind of the igniter at the top of the order?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what she is. She's an igniter, and what she does a great job of is turning singles into doubles with her speed. You know, she leads Oregon in stolen bases. Oregon's the top stolen base team in the Pac-12, one of the top teams nationally. And, you know, she really sets the tone at the top of the order. What she does is she gets a lot of infield singles. She just is able to locate where she wants to hit the ball in the dirt, and she tries to leg out a lot of balls with her slap hitting, and you know that's what she does, and you know she gets on base and steals bases to go that single to a double. But I think the one really underrated part about Kyle Lushar's game is her defense. There's a lot of diving plays that you see, but her arm is really, really good. She had a play against GCU earlier this year where she was able to have a double play where she caught the ball in the left center field alleyway, throw it across the field to first base and get it out there. And then there was a game against Cal where a runner was at second, ball hit to left field, and she was able to throw the runner out at home as they tried to go around third and go home. And so not only is she a trendsetter and an igniter at the top of the order, but she's also an igniter defensively, and we've seen the Ducks feed off that energy defensively and turn it into offense the next inning.
And the last thing I want to get to is this region. Look, we know Oklahoma is just a beast. They've won the last three titles. But BU, who's been to the NCAAs five of the last 6 years, I mean, they just absolutely dominated their league. They have 52 wins. So from what the coaches and players have said to what you've observed in your prep work, how dangerous is this group of Terriers?
They're very dangerous, and you know they can do it both offensively and defensively. They have a top 15 offense in terms of their batting average, lead their conference in a batting average at .325. So they're getting hits against the competition that they face this season, but their pitching is excellent. They lead the country in ERA as a staff, just a 1.26 ERA as a combined staff this season. They also lead the country in shutouts. They've had 28 shutouts this season, which is just remarkable. Very, very good team. And the most runs they've given up in a game all season was 6, and that came the second week of March. So they've given up 5 runs or less in every single game since the mid-March point. So this is a really good team. You know, a lot of people were talking about, oh, it's finally time that, you know, Coach Lombardi is going to face off against Oklahoma. And I'm like, well, hold up. Like, BU is not your typical 3-seed. Like, they're going to have to get through BU first if they want to have that opportunity to face Oklahoma. But I'd be nervous if I was Oregon looking at Boston University as their first-round game.
Yeah, it might be a cliche, but maybe one at a time here. Folks, he's Knight Yureski, beyond the call for KWVA as long as Oregon rolls in this postseason. It starts, like I said, BU tomorrow, 2:30. On Twitter, use the handle at @Knight_Yureski, but spell it Jareski. Hey, Knight, great stuff. Hope you have a bunch of awesome broadcasts. Travel safe, and thanks so much for joining the show.
Appreciate it, Steve. Enjoy the sunshine out in Eugene.
All right, take it easy.